234 or radiocab.net.
This is KBOO FM. You're listening to Out Loud, KBOO's Queer News. Thank you. KBOO Portland, and this is Out Loud, KBOO's Queer News and Culture radio program. Thanks for tuning in. This is KBOO. Thanks for tuning in. We are here on Out Loud Tuesday evenings, 6 p.m. Thanks for joining us. I'm Alan, your host tonight. We have a couple of organizers with the LGBTQ Meaningful Care Conference here tonight. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Tell us who you are. Let's start there.
Hi, I'm Dana Morrison. I'm the coordinator of the LGBTQ Health Coalition of the Columbia Willamette, and we are hosting the 2014 Meaningful Care Conference on March 28th, 2014. You community to be aware of kind of what we're doing and getting your providers and yourself to attend and kind of make sure that health disparities in Oregon are reduced.
And I'm Angela Carter. I am the Education Committee Chair for the Meaningful Care Conference, and I'm also a naturopathic physician and midwife in Northeast Portland.
Exciting. Thanks so much for being here. I've been looking over some of the data you sent me and the possible presentations and past presentations, and it seems like there's the conference and the folks who are going to present are able to cover a huge range of topics. And obviously, when we're talking about the health of LGBTQ folks, we're not just talking about, can I get in and get my physical? Can I get my vaccine shots? We're talking about mental health. We're talking about dental care. We're talking about trans care. We're talking about a lot of things. And even then, we're talking about care that needs to be targeted to folks who are in really different situations, whether it be age or income levels or race or ethnicity, or coming from different backgrounds and from different communities.
I think one of the things that the Meaningful Care Conference has been successful at bringing attention to is we are all grouped together into this LGBTQIA. Many other letters get added on a regular basis. And the reality is we are such a diverse community within all of those letters. And so the Meaningful Care Conference has topics on specific populations within our community, such as LGBT people, LGBT targeted presentations at that level. At the same time, looking at the overarching needs of our healthcare system to be more accepting and aware of the community needs and screening needs to ensure overall health.
We have a wide variety of presentations. Yes, we have everything ranging from transgender health. We have some specific tracks that we're going to be working with. We have a transgender health track. We have a mental health track, a special populations track, a youth track, and a clinical skills track. They're each divided up into four different sessions throughout the day, and we try to divide them equally so that people can follow a specific track through the conference if they so choose. We'll also have some conference presentations that are repeating so that people don't have to miss them if they go to other presentations in the morning. Some of the presentations, for instance, we have a presentation on cancer care and risk factors in the LGBTQ community by Karen Kovac and Summer Lee Cox. This is a very important presentation. There are many risk factors in the LGBTQ community that are separate from our straight counterparts. For instance, HPV is in higher prevalence in anal cancers in men who have sex with men. Breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and endometrial cancer are higher risk in lesbians, and a variety of other cancers come along with these special populations.
And I think one thing to really think about is when it comes to these cancers, because of barriers to care faced by our community members, people aren't accessing care until well past the screening stage. They're coming in when they're already really, really sick. So in general, the LGBTQ community has poorer health outcomes than the non-identified community because they're not getting screenings. I think the exception to that is the HIV community, because when you're HIV positive, you tend to be more engaged in medical care. And so you have those pre-screenings done through that. But in general, for the community, people are getting diagnosed much later in their illness. And so cancer death is actually much higher among lesbians than the general population.
Mm-hmm.
So the aim here is to educate consumers, so to use the word that healthcare advocates seem to appreciate. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. But consumers, as well as care providers, about all of these aspects of queer health.
As well as reducing those barriers to care. So I think one is the conference is targeting the general community to attend, to know what your doctor should be knowing. Not that it's our job to always educate our healthcare professionals, but we need to be aware that we need to be active participants in our health. And so this is a tool to help the community be active participants in health while also helping providers know how to provide correct care and the screenings that they should be looking at. One of the stats out there is intimate partner violence is really, really high in the community. And yet the stereotype of intimate partner violence or domestic violence is between a man and a woman. So doctors aren't screening gay couples or lesbian couples, and yet the rates are significantly higher in our community. And that leads to mental health and lost days at work, and just overall poor health outcomes. And so there's a lot of great potential for this conference to not only have community members attend, but also providers attend and healthcare administrators, because you could be the most culturally competent provider in the world, but if you don't have a system or an administration that supports the work that you're doing, you get your hands tied to provide the care that you know is needed. And so getting the administrators on board is also a focus of this year's conference. And we're going to open up the conference with a targeted presentation for healthcare providers, as well as how to advocate within systems for change, using OHSU as an example. They've been working along a long journey and a long path to providing excellent care for our community. And so bringing attention to where they've come and also where they know that they still need to go, because nobody's perfect and they're still working on that path.
Well, it's great for this conference to be able to provide a space for folks who are intersecting with medical care in these different roles to be in conversation with one another, because I think that's really difficult to find. And one of the things, you and I were talking about this earlier, Dana, one of the things that's really a challenge in seeking medical care of any kind is that it's really hard to know what you're supposed to be asking for generally, where you are, in terms of risk factors in general, or what you reasonably should expect your care to look like. And the more complex your experience is, the more questions you need to be able to ask and the more things you need to be able to be talking about with a care provider and exiting on a good day for anybody. So
one possibility for educators are so interested in doing so is to go to the Gay and Lesbian Medical Association website under the Health Consumers resources. There are lists of the top 10 things that you can talk to your provider about for lesbians, for gays, bisexual, transgender. They don't have one for intersex, unfortunately, but oftentimes that's a little more complicated and requires more than just a page. So that's one place you can go to look to find out more about what you should know about your health and how you can teach your doctor what they need to know to maintain your health.
That's wonderful. But before we track a little bit further into the content of this year's conference or even past conference discussions, tell us, who is putting this conference together? What is the coalition?
So the conference is Multnomah County, and so we have our roots within the Multnomah County Health Department. And they ran the conference for 3 or 4 years before it was deemed, is it best to be offering a conference from a county level approach, which is kind of a top-down approach, versus seeing if the community was organized and wanted to organize it as a community. And so we were approached by Multnomah County, former Commissioner Deborah Cafori was very instrumental in kind of moving it forward to have the community have ownership of the Meaningful Care Conference. So the county put it on and gave it a really great solid foundation for us to build on. And now it's a coalition made up of community members. Most are volunteer. I'm a volunteer coordinator myself. We don't have any paid staff, and we are all really kind of passionate individuals and people who are representative of a great many organizations, including Cascade AIDS Project, Q Center, Quest Center for Integrative Health, Partnership Project, Outside In. Multnomah County Health Department has stayed involved. The SAGE program at Friendly House has also been involved. And we also have been able to move into getting representation from the Association of Nurses and some of the more professional groups, as well as getting some healthcare systems involvement. So Providence Elder Place has sent representation to our meetings. And so we are able to open up more of a dialogue, being rooted in the community and then putting on this conference. And so 2012 was the first year that the coalition sponsored the conference, and we had over 400 attendees. And it was one of the largest conferences of its kind on the West Coast, providing cultural competency training for healthcare providers specific to the LGBTQ community. And our goal this year is to open it up to 500 people attending, and we're really hoping to get the word out and also try and get people from rural Oregon. There's definitely a need in rural Oregon for this type of education. And so we're trying to target providers in rural Oregon. We do offer travel reimbursement for folks coming from outside Portland metro area to try and really get folks to the table in Oregon so that we have a broader dialogue. Portland gets a lot of attention, but our statewide needs are still really high.
Is there other work that the coalition does throughout the year besides organize the conference?
So one of our big projects that we worked on was a community-based participatory research project funded by Northwest Health Foundation. And it was working in collaboration with Program Design and Evaluation Services. There's lots of acronyms in here. but they helped us run all of the data on health disparities in Oregon, which hadn't been done previously. And so we created action sheets, and they're still in a draft form. Our goal is to hold community meetings to really get answers to the data. One of the horrible things about data is it gets out there and then people interpret it the way that the community might not want it interpreted. And that's what we did not want to have happen. And so as part of our process, we have the data and we have these draft action sheets, which I shared with you. And you'll notice on the back, there's kind of an empty spot. And it's really a place where we want to record and put in community voice. And then those can be used to help advocate at the legislature. They can be used by our community partners. We work really closely with Basic Rights Oregon and their advocacy efforts, and trying to provide the data so that we have a footing to stand on. And then also showing where the huge holes in data are. So in Oregon, we only have data on lesbian, gay, and bisexual populations. And that data itself is flawed in that it's a telephone-based survey, and they assign your gender based on the sound of your voice, mm-hmm. which doesn't really work even for straight populations. questions. And Oregon has definitely been on the forefront of looking at how to ask gender questions on a national level, and have been testing questions for the CDC and have been really working on trying to get that data, because with that data, we're able to get targeted interventions to really make a difference. And so we have some, but it's also, there's a great hole.
Can we talk a little bit about what information these surveys did yield, or is it too early?
Oh, of course we can. So, I mean, I think it's great because it lets you know how important the Meaningful Care Conference is mm-hmm. to our community. I think, you know, I got asked the question, how many LGBTQ people of color are there in Oregon? Well, we don't know because the census doesn't ask sexual orientation. So we can't really go there. But we can look at the data that we do have. And so we had to combine data sets to get large enough numbers. So we actually looked at 5 years of data. It's 2005 to 2009. So the data that we have is fairly outdated in our community. And yet we saw some really, you know, disturbing and I think concerning things. And I think youth is a good place to start. So in general, we had things where you know, elders were doing better in getting their flu shot than the straight community. And we had lots of really good things. But in the youth, there was nothing that the youth were doing better than their straight counterparts as far as the health risk factors that we looked at. We do know that they are sexual minority youth in Oregon. And this is from the Oregon Healthy Teens Survey. So it's sexual practices as well as identity. And so it's kind of an interesting way of interpreting sexual orientation, but it's the best data that we have. And the most kind of compelling is thoughts of suicides. LGBTQ youth are more likely to be overweight or obese. So a lot of kind of really disturbing things. And one of our partners is the Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition, which I definitely suggest people look at, who've really looked at what schools can do and have done an assessment of schools and how competent the schools are at providing services to the community. And they have kind of, there's a report card out there on their website that you can look at to kind of see how your school is doing. Do they have an advocate in the school? And so using that data, and they will be hopefully presenting at the conference. We're still kind of working out the details because the conference happens to fall during spring break, which is also National LGBTQ Health Awareness Week, which is how we schedule it. But it's a key piece to look at. But looking at the data of the health outcomes at those schools, where there's really great programming. We know that things are effective, and we know that there's best practice, or there's really great promising practices. And so this conference is a chance to share that knowledge of what's working, and then build on that knowledge and build a network of providers who are really committed to providing great.
That sounds really, it's going to be really exciting to be able to present that data and have folks work from it. I was looking earlier at the summary of data for people of color, which is, again, from 2005 to 2009. And there's a lot of information here, a lot to be pulled apart and for folks to really think about. Is there anything you want to say about this particular data set?
I mean, I think one of the things is one in four LGBT people of color in Oregon have ever experienced intimate partner violence, compared to one in 10 of straight community members, regardless of race and ethnicity. And also, sexual assault is much higher among the LGBTQ people of color. About 50% of people who identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual people of color, the transgender community is not included, as I said, because of the way gender is assigned. But that's 50%. That's huge. And the impact that that has on mental health is staggering. So 30% of LGBT people of color report 14 or more days of poor mental health. That means 2 weeks out of every month they don't feel good. Have missed days of work as a result. And so that's compared to, if you just look at straight people of color, so not even looking at the straight population, but just straight people of color, you have 9% have experienced the poor mental health for 14 days. And part of that comes down to the historical trauma. And we have been fortunate to have a presenter who's going to speak on the role of that historical trauma, assuming it works out again spring break. but because there's the trauma of oppression and the role that that plays in your overall state of being. And so if you happen to be identified as the LGBTQ community, there is, all of us have experienced, I think, trauma at some level in our life and in our life process of coming to terms with who we are as a being. And add to that historical racism and other structural factors, and you get this compounding societal pressures and societal influence on your personal health that's really hard to overcome without some awareness on the part of the broader community of what you're facing.
Everybody wants to talk about the Affordable Care Act right now. it's unavoidable. And it's absolutely confusing. I myself have spent months working on my paperwork, and I seem to be making progress, but I'm not sure that I'm not sure that my insurance the financial part of it is all goofed up. We continue to have the same conversation over and over again about how that's supposed to work. I'm not even sure how to ask about how ACA is a factor in all of this. But I know that there are some aspects of ACA that are specifically about that aren't just about the finances of providing healthcare, but that are about making sure that care is more comprehensive.
I think Oregon has done a really great job, maybe not on the website, but has done a really great job of really looking at what the essential benefits package is and really going above and beyond even what Obamacare requires. Feedback from specific populations like the LGBTQ community on what needs to be in there. We're really fortunate to have an advocate, Liz Baxter, on the Health Insurance Exchange Board. She's been an advocate for health equity in Oregon for a long time, and she's a chair of our conference this year and can really speak to and probably will speak to the role that it plays in not being forgotten. I think that it's really easy, and states throughout the nation have had successes and challenges in the Affordable Care Act. And some of it, I know California went through a phase where they forgot the impact that covering people with HIV was going to cause, because people with HIV and the medications are really expensive. And so when they first switched over to California's plan, and this was a couple years ago because they were kind of ahead of the curve, they just dropped everyone who was HIV from insurance without even realizing it, because it's all done in a computer. Oregon has learned from those lessons, has learned from what's gone on in Washington, and has, I think, been really thoughtful about how to try and include a consumer voice, especially from specific populations like the LGBTQ community. So I think we are going to see increased coverage, maybe not as much as we'd like, that is sponsored by Transactive, which is a great organization in the Portland area, is focused on OHP, the Oregon Health Plan, is going to be covering hormone suppression medications for youth beginning in October. And that's a huge step. And I'm going to let Angela speak more about why that's a huge step and kind of what that means for our youth. We were already talking about the statistics on youth, but I think she can kind of speak to what I mean when I say hormone suppression therapies.
So for transgender youth, blocking puberty is essential. Oftentimes, transgender youth are not able to the hormone blocker, puberty blocker. It's a gonadotropin blocking analog. They are not able to access because it is so tremendously expensive, and the Oregon Health Plan is finally going to cover this. They will not cover hormone therapy. That is not yet covered. We're working on it. But they will cover the puberty blocking medications that are given once monthly for children to keep them from going through basically the incorrect puberty, the puberty that feels very wrong to many transgender youth, and allows them to have an appropriate puberty when they reach the age of 16, oftentimes. Some providers do it younger, but allows them to have an appropriate puberty to match their gender. And that's all. Thank you. Pardon my throat. Got a frog.
Great. Is there any other data you want to touch on briefly, Dana?
I think I've already touched a little bit on the intimate partner violence, but one of the stats, and Angela and I were talking about it in the car on the way over, that is always shocking to me, is the... We look at our statistics, so we look at smoking, and they say, okay, we're going to group everybody together, LGBT. That we can't do transgender, but we look at the lesbian, gay, and bisexual population, and it's around 21%, give or take, on the year that you're looking at the data for smoking prevalence, which is high. But when you look at the communities within lesbian, gay, and bisexual, the bisexual community has by far the worst health statistics, and no one really pays attention to it. And anecdotally, and kind of looking at the data, if you look at the increased mental health days, we see that bisexual populations, they don't have the same community mm-hmm. that your lesbian communities have and gay communities have, and they don't really fit in the straight community. And so as a pansexual woman myself, it's like, where do I fit? And, you know, I happen to have other privileges and other successes, but at the same time, it's really important to look at this community that has higher binge drinking. Smoking is up to 36% of bisexual women are smokers. I mean, that's huge. And luckily, by being able to, from Northwest Health Foundation, we were actually able to start teasing out what's going on in our community, because our community is so diverse, even if we're lumped together. And to that nuance and how much is going on even within our community, and making other community members aware of the different challenges that are faced, I think builds greater solidarity in general among all of us kind of working together to kind of promote all of our health.
Wonderful. For folks who are interested, Cameron and another woman who I don't know, but Cameron was on the show a couple of months ago, run a bisexual discussion group at Q Center. So give Q Center a call or check out their online calendar if you're interested. We're going to spend a couple minutes with Chaka Khan now, and then we're going to come back with Dana and Angela to talk more about the LGBTQ Meaningful Care Conference. Thanks so much. This is Out Loud. I'm Alan, your host tonight. We're here with Dana Morrison and Angela Carter of the LGBTQ Meaningful Care Conference. Before we get back into our conversation, I want to say that the phone lines are open to your questions for our guests tonight. Here is 503-231-8187. 231-8187. We'd love to hear from you. Angela, do you want to tell us, first of all, where can folks find information about this conference, when, where, and how?
So our website is the
www.OregonLGBTQHealth.org/MCC to go straight to conference information. So again, that's www.OregonLGBTQHealth.org/MCC.
Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about the presentations that we have coming up for the conference. We will be having a presentation on PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is very relevant to the LGBTQ community, but also to many other communities. This is something that many providers need to know about, and many have not had adequate training on how to prevent the inoculation of the body with HIV using various different medications, how to prevent once someone has been exposed the contraction of the HIV virus. I will shamelessly promote my own presentation. I'm going to be doing a presentation on the long-term implications of hormone replacement therapy in trans people, and I'm mitigating them with naturopathic medicine. So this is a useful presentation, not only for researchers and for clinicians, but also for people who are interested in improving their health who are transgender.
And the conference is on March 28th of 2014. And that's in conjunction with LGBTQ Health Awareness Week. It's the Friday of that week. And so it's good to know it's a day-long conference, but we're also doing a Thursday evening networking event to try and really put providers in the same room together to really build networks, build referral resources, and build a community around LGBTQ health. So that's going to be the Thursday night before, in conjunction with the conference. It's all day Friday, March 28th.
Wonderful. March 28th. We have Clara on the line. Hi, Clara.
Hi there. I just let the ambulance go by. So I'm just calling because I think I heard you say that lesbian women have more cancers, and you mentioned some of them. And I was wondering why that would be.
Well, there are several reasons that are postulated. Historically, and not necessarily, this is data that is not necessarily totally up to date. It's the best data that we have. One potential reason is lesbians use less birth control, and birth control is protective against breast and ovarian cancer. Another reason potentially is the lower rate of childbirth. Having children can be protective against breast cancer.
There's also data on screening. So a lot of times,
screening, yes.
HPV and certain STD screenings are not done among lesbian communities unless they ask for it from their provider. That doesn't mean that you're not at risk if you're a lesbian. Mm-hmm. It just means that providers sometimes have a stereotype that STDs are transmitted male to female, female mm-hmm. to male. And so if you're not getting screened and you have an untreated STD, it can make your body more susceptible to certain types of cancer.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's talk a bit more about mitigating the long-term effects of hormone therapy.
Okay.
So let's dig into that a little bit.
Can arise for people who are taking hormone therapy. They don't necessarily have to. In general, a good lifestyle with healthy diet, regular cardiovascular exercise, and a good psychosocial environment provide enough to keep people in good health. But some things that do arise with hormone replacement therapy are things like high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol. It's possible for transgender men to have something called polycythemia, which is an overproduction of red blood cells. So I'm going to be talking about some of the things in naturopathic medicine that have been either historically or clinically proven by research to improve those specific healthcare issues that arise in the transgender community.
Great. That sounds pretty useful information to have for folks.
I just wanted to follow up on the pre- and post-exposure prophylaxis. Mm-hmm. I really think that my background is in HIV services, and I've worked in HIV services for over 14 years in the Portland metro area. And one of the things that I think this topic is really valuable for both individual community members as well as providers is if you happen to live a lifestyle that might put you at risk for HIV infection, pre-exposure prophylaxis is a approved method mm-hmm. of taking certain medications. Don't ever take your friend's HIV meds and think it's going to work because it doesn't work that way. Mm-mm. But talk to your doctor. But the other thing is your doctor needs to know the information. So not only does the consumer need to advocate, because pre-exposure and post-exposure prophylaxis are very new or relatively new approved treatments to prevent the spread of HIV. So you as a consumer need to know, but also the doctors need to know. And that talk really focuses on what the difference is, how they work, are you a good candidate for it or not? One of the biggest concerns has always been drug resistance. Mm-hmm. And so there's ways of doing it that have been approved and tested, and it's a great resource, and Multnomah County has really been on the forefront of providing great treatment in this realm, but it's really hard because you still go to the emergency room, and emergency rooms don't know about post-exposure prophylaxis, and doctors don't feel comfortable prescribing. And so the talk is targeted at healthcare providers to help them feel comfortable prescribing post-exposure prophylaxis and pre-exposure prophylaxis. But it also is for the consumer to know how to advocate for that and know what resources you have in the community, because there are resources that you can contact to help in advocating to get the medical treatment that you need should you unexpectedly get exposed to HIV. And so it's a really great – one of our really great talks. It was one a talk that we had in 2012 that was really well attended and well received that we're actually bringing back because it led to a lot of discussions. And so I just wanted to kind of do a plug for that because mm-hmm. I think it's important. HIV is not going away. There's been no reduction in our number of people living with HIV since the early 80s, and I think people need to be aware of that. It's still very much a pressing need in our community, and this is a great intervention.
And that's an especially great discussion for folks to have because that experience of possibly being exposed to HIV is, I think, overwhelmingly anxiety-causing. It makes it really difficult for folks to figure out what exactly they're supposed to do. You know, and the most you can think about, I think, for folks that have talked to me about this is the most you can do is hope that you call your doctor and you don't have to say more than four words and they automatically know what you mean and write you a prescription. And that's it. You don't really have to have a conversation about it. They just give you, you know, your handful of pills and you walk out and don't have to say another word about it. And it's not like that at all. A reminder, we are taking calls from you, our listeners, 503-231-8187. Liam's hanging out and waiting to hear from you. And tell us again what the website is for finding information on the conference.
www.OregonLGBTQHealth.org/MCC. You can go just to our regular website to get more information about the Health Coalition. We are a coalition of active community members as well as organization representatives, so we always are looking for new faces to get involved in the work that we do to ensure that the needs of LGBTQ community are not forgotten in healthcare discussions.
So folks can find out presentations as they are arranged, scheduled, and are listed on the website, and they can also register there. And what does registration involve?
So the registration for the conference this year is we have general admission, which is $65, and that's a day-long conference and includes breakfast and lunch. And then we are offering continuing medical education credits and continuing education credits depending on your profession. So we have historically had social workers, chiropractors, naturopathic physicians, as well as medical providers and nurses all have access to their continuing education credits that they need for their licensure or their practice. And so as you add, depending on your CEUs are $85, I believe, and the CMEs are $150, and that is a tiered pricing. You can also add educational credits the day of the conference if you just want to do general registration, and we do have student tickets available for $40 to cover our cost of food. This is intentionally a very low-cost conference because we're really hoping to get people in the room that need to get in the room. Mm-hmm. So we want to get the doctors to say, oh, a cheap way to get my CMEs. Great. Because we might get those folks that aren't already advocates in our community. We always have a great contingent of great providers in our community, but we really want to reach out to people where this might be a stretch for them. And I think that that's a really great place to be. And so we want to make it affordable and easy.
We also have a presentation in the morning, which would be specifically geared towards healthcare administrators and front office staff. And that is $25 just for that morning workshop and breakfast.
Wonderful. This is a broad and general question, but how receptive do you think care providers in the area are to having discussions about these issues?
Well, that varies a great deal. Some people are not knowledgeable but willing, and some people are quite uncomfortable. There's been a lot of, like we said earlier, there's been a lot of stigma around the LGBTQ community in medicine, and there are medical providers who definitely could use this training, who I have had personal experiences with providers who misgender and maybe just don't understand that their patient's gender identity. I've had interactions with doctors who don't understand the relationship between HIV and the LGBTQ community. So there's definitely plenty of room for growth, but there are also a lot of great providers in the Portland area, which many of which will be presenting at the conference. So I'm very excited.
And I think that one thing that we have on our website that we are slowly compiling is providers who attend the conference. We have them listed on our website with their permission if they wanted to, as someone who's gone to a training and who's committed to providing LGBTQ culturally competent healthcare. We're not advocating or saying that they do or they don't, because I've not been to them, but we are saying that they have made a statement of commitment to try and provide that care. And so that's a directory resource that people can access. And so after every meaningful care conference, we update that with folks who have attended and who have stated that commitment. And so there's also resources on the website to look for folks. We also are happy, if you don't feel like you can advocate with your provider to say, hey, you should go to this, we are happy to do outreach. If you send us an email, we can do a kind of a targeted mailing to that provider to encourage them to attend. That doesn't mean that they will, but we are happy to try and kind of move things forward. Like I said, it's hard that it's all on our responsibility to get folks in the room, but it is a place to start to create a healthier Oregon.
And that's wonderful that you're willing to contact care providers when folks aren't comfortable doing that themselves, to invite them to the conference to participate in these conversations. Off the top of your heads, and perhaps either one of you knows this better than just about anybody in the city, maybe. Is there some other sort of resource list of care providers who are comfortable or have good ratings, so to speak, in web speak, in providing care to trans folks, bisexual folks, queer folks?
Well, there is the Q Center website. Resources PDX has a list of all different kinds of providers who the providers sign up. They're not vetted by any organization, but the providers go to the website, find it, and sign up. So more than likely, they are people who, since they are seeking out this place to put their name, these are people who are interested in serving the community and more than likely have the knowledge and the resources to do so. There is also a website with mental health care providers. I think it's LGBTQ counseling resources. I'd have to look it up. I'm sorry. But there.
Sorry, I didn't prepare you for that question at all.
I'll look it up. I might even have it right here.
Tell us the website once again.
So the website to contact us or to get more information on the Meaningful Care Conference is www.OregonLGBTQHealth.org/MCC. And if you click on any of the buttons to contact someone, I'm the one that you contact. So you know that you'll be getting to me, whether it's info@ or Dana@. I throw a Y in my name just to confuse people. But you can always contact us. We're more than happy to connect you to the resources that we know of. But again, there's not like a Yelp rating or any ratings of providers, other than if you kind of go to Yelp and look up specific providers to kind of rate people's experiences, other than people who self-select to sign up for these resources. So Q Center has a great resource. Ours is ones who have attended the conference and that sort of thing.
GLBTCounseling.com is the mental health website.
Say that. Can you say that?
GLBTCounseling.com.
And is that local? Or?
That's local. It's a directory of Sexual Minority Providers Alliance in Portland, Oregon.
Great. Thanks so much for looking that up. Mm-hmm. GLBTCounseling.com. All right. That's pretty great. I know you want to talk some more about, a little bit more about at least one of the presentations.
Well, I think we should kind of highlight our keynote speaker again for those who might be joining the show late, because I think we mentioned it at the very beginning. So we've been very fortunate to have Stephen Barrios. He is a two-spirit identified individual out of Montana who is coming to us to not only share his experiences as a consumer, but also to educate people about two-spirit communities and to make themselves aware in the Northwest that there's a large two-spirit community that is not always seeking their health care on the reservation, although we are doing outreach to try and get some of the providers for the reservation to attend. But he's also going to speak about his advocacy and work in HIV, Hep C, and harm reduction programs throughout the Northwest, and his work as an elder advisor in our community. And so I think we're really fortunate to have his voice to kind of add to the mix. So we are very thankful that he said yes, and excited to be able to offer this resource, because I don't think that the two-spirit community gets any real coverage within the broader LGBTQ context, and wanting to bring attention to the fact that we are diverse, and it's good for us to be made aware of kind of what the unique needs are of specific populations in our community.
Great. Is there another presentation you wanted to speak to?
I will talk briefly about Dr. Dionne Nelson's presentation. She will be speaking on how using a health at every size approach can support LGBTQ health. So people of size often get a lot of flack for their size from their healthcare providers, and more data is coming out around size not necessarily being an independent risk factor for poor health, it being more related to cardiovascular markers, lifestyle, etc. So Dionne is going to talk some about how to improve. There's higher rates of obesity, and she's going to talk about helping those populations maintain their health, regardless of size, maintaining good lifestyle, good diet, etc.
You reminded me there's a two-spirit conference in Portland. I think it's close to the date of the Meaningful Care Conference.
Is it related to NARA, the Native American Rehabilitation Center? They have a great two-spirit program there. I don't know about the conference.
Yeah, I will. I'll send you information.
Thank you. That would be excellent.
Yeah.
I do know that we are fortunate. Lewis and Clark College has come up with the Two-Spirit Toolkit, and that's a program that Sodome has been working on, and she has been toolkit working with us to see if they can kind of present the toolkit at the conference. And so we're going to be following up with them.
We had Seattle on the show October or November to talk about the Tribal Equity Toolkit, who are part of the Two-Spirit group here in Portland. And are, I can't remember the information off the conference. I can't remember the information off the top of my head. It's been a couple of months, but I'll dig that up and I'll post it on Out Loud's Facebook, Outlook Radio on Facebook, Outlook Radio on Facebook. So we keep you abreast of all the exciting queer news here and some national stuff. I'll put that out there again. Yeah, because it's good to know.
Great, that would be a great resource for us as well.
Yeah. So March 28th.
Early. Breakfast is started around 8 a.m., programming at around 8:30. But we try and end it by 4:30, so you still get home a little bit early on your Friday evening.
And it's in Northeast Portland?
It's going to be at the Lloyd Center Doubletree Hotel. They have great capacity to breakout rooms, serve us, and have all of the breakout rooms that we need for a conference of this size.
So it's welcome. Cool. And so it's welcome. Folks who are invited are care providers administrators and staff, and anybody who's interested in any of these.
Anyone who's interested in promoting.
That's great.
So one of the, if you wanted to talk about some of the data that we have that we haven't really touched on, LGBT don't necessarily get enough attention, and I think one of the SAGE program has doing, the House, which has the SAGE program, has doing a major shout out in our community, and so I just want to give a shout out to them. But one of the things that we've seen in the data is, this week counted as 55 to 70, and there was actually a lot of challenge, 5 to 70, and there was actually a lot of challenges in running the data because, we don't have the elders that the straight think about is. And so that's something to really think about in the 80s. HIV took a big toll in the 80s. And so when we're looking at our elders now, we definitely see a disparity there. And so when we ran the 70-year-olds to look at 55 to 70-year-olds to run any meaningful comparisons. And so that's something to also bring attention to. And then we also look at the fact that our elders may not have kids who are their caregivers and don't have other assisted living situations. And so in looking at the situations, and so in looking at the data, we find that LGBT elders have much poorer mental health, are more likely to experience food insecurity, and have with that, but also have this history of intimate partner violence that's going on. Their lives, but it's one of those things that gets reported partner violence. So we have this kind of intimate partner violence. So if that's your support structure and there's unhealthy relationships there, it's leading to negative health outcomes. And so it's really bringing attention to the fact that our elders, I think, need in our community attention in our community because I hope that we all become disparities. Someday I hope that we all become elders in our community. Mm-hmm. But let's try and make it an easier path going forward. And so just kind of bringing some attention to that. And that's what the attention is a really key issue about, is bringing attention to really key issues that are going on. Because a lot of elders, when they recloset themselves, they're recloset for your over with their doctors. And that's not good for your over, because of your chain health either. Because you go into living situation as you go into throughout the states. And that's true. Kind of wanted to the state. So I just kind of wanted to where we're plug out to how, if we can reduce where we're going and how if we can reduce health disparities now, just think we're on the show, you know, 30 years from now when we're on the show and what we get to say about elders then.
Thank you so much for that information. Sort of as a wrap up, are there things you want to tell us in short that are most exciting for you about being able to put this conference together?
I think the thing we have C is by far the most exciting thing. We have so many different passionate people. We have students, and we have some elders in the community that are very involved in kind of planning. And our whole community is vetted by the community. So it's not like one person's going and saying yes, no, yes, no. We have a group of people that have gotten together, say, this is thing, that talk through everything and say, this is what we want to it's with the provider community. And so it's really a community of voice that shines through. Sure, we have presentations from people who have their MDs or NDs or different letters after their, but it's still very much vetted. And so that's what with a community vetted about, and being able to share that with it about, and being able to
For me, the medical care for me, the Meaningful Care Conference was a substation in of my medical education. In this is Q Healthcare, which is this is a community of life and my entire life, and I wasn't finding the answers anywhere as to how to do so until I found this conference. I believe it was my either my first or second year of medical school. So I'm excited to be able to continue conference and improve medical training for medical improve health for the improve health for the LGBTQ community in general.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. One last time, the website for the LGBTQ Meaningful Care Conference coming up in March, where folks can get more information and register.
www.lgbtqhealth.org. Or that's www.oregonlgbtqhealth.org. And we look forward to seeing you on March.
Thank you so much to great. Matt Morrison and Angela Carter for being here with us and for organizing this great conference. I'm very excited for organizing this great conference. I'm very excited about it. Among other next week on Out Loud, among other guests, we're going to be hearing from Cayenne Pepper and Carla Rossi about an art project they're working. Next Tuesday, next Tuesday at 6 p.m., Out Loud, be proud and live out loud. This is Out Loud Radio on KVU. I'm Alan, and up next is Hard Knock Radio. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mo is Shy, the KABU docudrama based on the Portland Christmas tree trial, airs this January 29th, 6 to 8 p.m. Here's Ken Jones as prosecutor Evan Bishop.
On November 26, 2010, the day after Thanksgiving, thousands of American families attended the Christmas tree lighting ceremony at Portland's Pioneer Square. Little did they know that this defendant had been plotting and scheming for several months to murder them all.
January 29th, 6 to 8 p.m.
Tune in Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. for The Melting Pot, featuring DJs, producers, and electronic artists from around the globe. Win tickets and stay up on events each and every Tuesday.